Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Neil Nymark, and I'm excited to be here with you today. This is a talk entitled The Healing Power of Journaling, and I am a board-certified family doctor, graduated from the Ohio State University College of Medicine in 1981, and I had the great fortune of studying with Dr. Herbert Benson from Harvard Medical School and Joan Borisenko, both pioneers in the field of mind-body medicine, and I was introduced to them back in 1983 and attended some of their courses and got to attend many of their seminars and learn firsthand the power of mind-body medicine and how it affects everything we do in life, as you'll soon see in this talk. I am a member of the volunteer clinical faculty at the University of California, Irvine Medical School, and I also have a concierge family practice in Irvine, California. I want to start with a little personal story how I got involved in journaling. It was during my internship year, and I was under probably the most extreme emotional, physical stress I had ever experienced, 100-hour weeks, and being far away from home and family. And eventually, within several months, I got sick and was hospitalized with mononucleosis and a case of a secondary inflammatory hepatitis. And at that point, I realized that my physical stress, my emotional stresses had caused me to become physically ill, and I committed myself to seeking out ways to help others avoid stress getting to such an extreme that it compromised their health. So one of the things that I discovered was that journaling was a way that helped me express my emotion and release my stress, so that I was actually strengthened by it rather than depleted by the stress. So here was a way that adversity now was causing me to be a stronger person rather than lowering my immune system and lowering my my will and my emotional mood. So it actually, I found that journaling was an incredible psychological workout. It made me stronger mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And since that time, I have really devoted my life to helping others see this connection between the mind, the body, and the spirit. And I've come to believe that optimal physical health really can only occur in the larger context of our emotional, mental, and spiritual health. So that every day I see patients come to my office with health problems that stem from exuberant stresses, poor boundaries, unresolved emotions, or spiritual emptiness or lack of meaning in life. And it's come to make me realize this weak link theory that we all have different thresholds for stress and adversity in life. And now, don't get me wrong, we need stress. If we're under-stressed, we're not motivated to work and do well. But if we have too much, it weakens us. So we need ways to optimize that that zone where we're producing optimally. So my goal has been, when I realize that we all have different thresholds for stress, I consider this like the links on a chain, that if you pull the edges too tightly with too much power, that we all have a weak link that will break first. And for some of us, it may be our immune system, and we get sick, we get colds, we get recurrent sore throats. For some of us, it may be our neurological system, where we get headaches and general malaise. We just feel out of it and fatigued. For some of us, it may be our gastrointestinal system, where we get irritable bowel syndrome or reflux or heartburn or diarrhea. In other words, we all have a weak link, and under stress, that weak link will show up. So that becomes our barometer for what's going on in our lives. And then we need to pay attention to that and work on getting our emotional, mental, and spiritual life back together. So my goal was to teach simple ways in this, in the book, the Handbook of Journaling, as well as in this video, that you can learn to process your physical, emotional, and spiritual stress before it creates illness. Now, the book is a series of self-help journaling techniques, and you can go through them, and it really serves as a kind of like your own personal counselor or doctor to help guide you through some of the stresses that you may be having, so that they're revealed to you more clearly and clear and specific ways for you to attack and address those stresses is revealed as well. We're all wounded, and whether it's by our family circumstances growing up or our genetics or illness or misfortune in life, we all have a wounded part, and we need to learn how to walk into that wounded part, discover it, and seek to live a meaningful life, either in spite of it or to build up the strength to repair those parts that we can. And I believe that we all crave and deserve on some level to be whole, to be healed. And this is my vision here, to provide you the tools necessary to begin that healing process. So before we start in on this mind-body-spirit medicine, I want to tell you what it is. There are many complementary terms: alternative medicine, complementary medicine, integrative medicine, holistic, psychoneuroimmunology. But in the end, what I've realized is they all amount to the same thing, and that is we must reach out for the best that medical science has to offer, and we must reach within to mobilize our own internal resources for healing. That science and medicine provides us certain things we can draw on, but inside each one of us, there is a powerful reservoir of internal resources for healing that we need to learn how to mobilize and draw upon. So what's a good definition for mind-body medicine? And before I get into this, it reminds me of a cartoon I once saw that was rather amusing. It showed this doctor taking notes while this patient was explaining all her symptoms. And he goes, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, slow down, Mrs. Fitzgerald. Remember, I have to translate all your layman's terms into medical gobbledygook." So before we get into this medical gobbledygook, remember, it's simple. It's sometimes hard to define. And I'm going to throw around a lot of medical terms, but the simple idea to remember is that we have these powerful resources for healing within us that we need to draw upon, that require our own involvement and our own participation in healing in order to tap into. So a definition that I came up with years ago was: the field of mind-body-spirit medicine teaches that the unseen energies of thought, feeling, attitude, belief, and imagination become manifest in the physical body, weaving the very fabric of our physiology and biochemistry. Now, Norman Cousins says that a little more concisely and profoundly. He says there are forces in the human mind that are no less powerful than a physician's prescription pad. So, to summarize, the basic premises of mind-body-spirit medicine is that all our thoughts and feelings are chemical. This was an idea originally brought to light by Bernie Siegel, famous Yale author and surgeon. And when you think that all our thoughts and feelings are basically translated into chemical messenger molecules, now many of you have heard of neuropeptides. They're one of many chemical messenger molecules, but they're basically the chemical equivalent of a thought, feelings, attitudes, and beliefs. And in this sense, one of the keys of mind-body-spirit medicine is that all healing helps to make these invisible thoughts, feelings, attitudes, and beliefs we have visible. That when hidden thoughts or beliefs that may disturb the balance in our health become visible, we can then begin to address them, and in that process we can create a greater amount of health and healing in our lives. Now, if you look at this next slide, I drew upon this from a book I read 25 years ago, The Wellness Workbook by John Travis and Regina Sarah Ryan. Sorry, that's a misprint. Regina Sarah Ryan. And I call this the wellness pyramid. And what you see here is we can move from the invisible to the visible. Remember we said that all healing helps to make the invisible visible. And what we learn from this is that we suffer now from diseases of choice, not chance. That our physical health is really only the tip of the process, the tip of the iceberg. This line here symbolizes like a water. I guess I should call this the wellness iceberg, not pyramid, since it's underwater. But what we're seeing is physical health here is at the tip, the top. It represents our lifestyle choices, the choices we make in life, our diet, our exercise, our the behaviors we exhibit, and those most often come from our psychological choices in life, the attitudes and beliefs we hold that determine the lifestyles we choose for ourselves. And then the most fundamental basis of our health lies in our spiritual choices, our sense of meaning, sense of purpose in life, the belonging, a sense of belonging that we have. And this is fundamentally, our spiritual choices amount to our sense of a higher purpose in life. Are we here for a reason that's meaningful? And our belief in a higher power, something greater than ourselves. So we see these are invisible levels, our spiritual choices, our psychological choices, and then they start to become more and more manifest in our lifestyle choices and our physical health. And journaling helps us to uncover these spiritual, psychological, invisible layers that lead to the visible problems or the good things about our health. So how do we make the invisible visible? Well, think of a CT scan. A CT scan looks inside our bodies and it may find an invisible tumor, make it visible, and then once it's recognized, we can create a treatment plan and the healing process can begin. Well, I like to look at journaling. It's like a CT scan of the heart, the mind, and the soul. It reveals to us the invisible feelings we have, the invisible thoughts that we have, and the invisible elements of our soul, our belief in a higher purpose, a higher power, a sense of vision or meaning, destiny or legacy for our lives. So we see that journaling helps us do this because in journaling we use words, and our words really become a visible symbol of the invisible world of our feelings, that's our heart, our mind, which is our thoughts, our attitudes and beliefs, and our soul, which is a sense of purpose, meaning, belonging and connectedness to life. So putting words to our feelings reveals our heart, and that's a vital pathway to our healing system. Likewise, putting words to our thoughts reveals our state of mind, which leads us to another vital pathway to healing. And equally important, or maybe more important than all of these, is putting words to our spiritual life, to our sense of belonging, connectedness, purpose, and meaning in life, or the lack of meaning, reveals our soul and becomes essential for our healing. Now, neurosignatures, this is one of those medical gobbledygook terms, but it's a wonderful term. And it's really a link between the visible and the invisible. Herbert Benson introduced this term in Timeless Healing, And what he said was all life events have neurosignatures, and these are complex patterns of nerve cell firing and chemical release that occur in the body. Now, neurosignatures occur from one of four places. They can be factory installed or hardwired. We can past learned experiences create neurosignatures that are stored as memories in our mind and our body. Current experiences tap into neurosignatures and create them. And future imagined experiences. So this is the power of visualization. And these neurosignatures from any of these four places are stored in our body and mind as memories. Now, there are really two types of neurosignatures. One is what we call bottom-up, and this means outside experiences coming in. So we may be visualizing a sunset. That beautiful sunset triggers a series of nerve impulses and chemicals that are released in our nervous system. Neuropeptides and chemical messenger molecules, and that creates a memory of an event. Now, there are also top-down neurosignatures, and these are signatures that come from our imagination that we think about. So our thoughts in the moment can create a complex pattern of nerve cell firing and chemical release, and this is how visualizations occur. Visualization, we either remember past experiences, we heighten current present moment experiences, or we can imagine future experiences, and these create neurosignatures. And the key to this and why it's so important was developed by Dr. Coslin and SNM Alpert in the Journal of Cognitive Neuroscience back in 1993. They did special PET scan technology that showed that the same parts of the brain are activated whether people actually experience something or just vividly imagine it. This is an incredible thought. It tells us that the body cannot tell the difference. The mind, the body, cannot tell the difference between what really happens and what we vividly imagine. Now, Mark Twain says it best. He goes, "I've experienced many terrible things in my life, a few of which actually happened." I love that. So, what we see is that Norman Cousins tells us that the human mind converts our ideas and expectations, our imaginations, our visualizations into biochemical realities through these complex patterns of nerve cell firing and chemical release called neurosignatures. Now, how does journaling fit into this? Journaling taps into those neurosignatures. And I want to introduce one more concept before we move on to some of the studies on journaling, and that is the concept of self-care. Herbert Benson, again, one of my mentors and author of The Relaxation Response, it says that medical care is like a three-legged stool. We have surgeries and procedures that can be performed on us to improve our health. We have drugs and herbs that can be taken. And we also have this innate reservoir of healing ability that comes under the category of self-care. Now, remember our initial definition of mind-body-spirit medicine. We need to reach out for the best that science has to offer, and that occurs here in this area of surgery and procedures, drugs and herbs, and then reaching within occurs in this area of self-care here. So we see that journaling taps into that ability. And what Benson says is no healing force is more impressive or more universally accessible than the power of the individual to care for and cure him or herself. Now, David Sobel, back in 1993, in the Mental Medicine Update, said that when patients are encouraged to play an active role in their health care, in other words, to engage in this healing power of self-care, here's what happens. The total number of outpatient visits decreased by 17%. Visits for minor illness were down by 35%. Hospital surgical ward stays down 1.5 days. Office visits for asthma down 49%. Office visits for arthritis down 40%. And C-sections down by 56%. An amazing amount of physical healing occurs through this healing power of self-care. Now, how does self-care work? Remember, all our thoughts and feelings are chemical, and they're translated into these neural signatures that can act for our health or against our health to create illness. Now, all methods of self-care on some level address this underlying thoughts and feelings and our ability to recover and the meaning of our life. So on some level, we can change what we call the narrative of our illness or our life story. And when we rewrite this story, we're really changing our thoughts and feelings about what's happened to us. And this changes our neurosignatures, which is a change in biochemistry. And it allows us to tap into this powerful reservoir of self-care and self-healing. And we'll understand more about this when we talk about what's called our inner pharmacy here next. Our inner pharmacy is a term proposed by Howard Brody, MD, PhD, and author of a great book called The Placebo Response. Now, everybody realized the placebo response was that we thought it was like a sugar pill or something like that, that when people took it, an amazing amount, usually about 30%, would improve even though there was no real medicinal value in that sugar pill. Now, how did this happen? It happened because the placebo response really taps into what's called our inner pharmacy. This is our body's ability to produce an endless array of neuropeptides, neurotransmitters, hormones, antibodies, and chemical agents that fight off disease, improve our immunity, increase energy, relieve pain, and restore health and balance to our lives. Now, the question, of course, is how do you fill a prescription at the inner pharmacy? There are really two ways that you can do that. Walter Cannon, the great Harvard physiologist, initially proposed the idea of the wisdom of the body, that our body knows what it needs, and it can fill our prescriptions that are needed automatically and unconsciously. This is like Bernie Siegel has a great saying that I love. He says, As a surgeon, I cut into the body, and I don't need to tell the wound how to heal. That all I have to do is bring the edges together, and the wound, the body in its wisdom, knows how to heal itself. And it does it in part by allowing this inner pharmacy to release the right chemicals and pharmaceutical agents that can help heal our body. Now, the other less commonly known way that we can tap into the power of our inner pharmacy is our thoughts, feelings, attitudes, beliefs, and imagination create prescriptions that our inner pharmacy can fill. That is, with conscious thought and intention. And remember, the wisdom of the body does it automatically, but this is where journaling and meditation and self-care come into play, that with conscious thought and intention, we can alter our thoughts, feelings, attitudes, and beliefs and change the prescriptions that our inner pharmacy fills. Now, to go back to this placebo response, because it's so important, remember we originally talked about making the invisible visible. The placebo response is really where conscious and unconscious meet, where the invisible becomes visible, where the invisible elements of mind and body meet. So we see now that the placebo response is a change in the body that occurs as a result of the symbolic significance which one attributes to an event or object in the healing environment. So it's more than just a sugar pill. The symbolic significance could have to do with the belief you have in your doctor, the belief in a treatment plan. We have lots of case histories where patients will develop allergic reactions to the sight of plastic roses because they're allergic to real roses. So the plastic rose doesn't create allergy, but the thought, the symbolic significance of seeing those roses will create an asthma or allergy attack in someone who's allergic. Let me give you another powerful explanation of the power of positive belief that is the placebo response. Dr. Butler and Steptoe, back in 1986, did one of the most fascinating experiments. They took asthma patients and divided them into two groups. Now, both groups were told they would be exposed to a chemical that was going to trigger an asthma attack. Only one group was then told that they were going to be pre-treated with a compound that would prevent the asthma attack. So, the results of this study were that those in the pre-treated group were much less likely to develop an asthma attack. Now, the amazing thing about this experiment is that what I call the catch here was that both of these compounds, the chemical irritant and the pre-treatment compound, were plain water. So this was a case where asthma was simultaneously both caused by and prevented by the power of belief. So it was simply the symbolic significance in the mind that allowed that to either create an asthma attack or prevent one. Norman Cousins says it so succinctly in his book Head First, The Biology of Hope, that belief becomes biology, that our thoughts and our feelings are chemical. Now, let's get into the healing power of journaling. Journaling really works in four succinct ways. Journaling helps us to process difficult emotions. That's called emotional disclosure and emotional release. So it allows us to process these difficult emotions before they make us ill. It allows us to overcome negative thoughts and limiting beliefs. This is what we call cognitive restructuring. It helps us to discover who we are, what we feel, and what we want. Sort of self-awareness, honest self-expression, or what's termed sometime in the literature honest self-report or self-disclosure. And number four, it helps us to be true to ourselves, what we call congruency. So let's look at each one of these in some detail. Number one, emotional disclosure. Emotional disclosure, the ability to process emotions before they make us ill, has to do with the concept in the literature called resiliency. This is the ability to bounce back from adversity or even to harness that adversity to make us stronger and more robust. Now, this term, advanced by Daniel Goleman in his book Emotional Intelligence, talks about what's called the EQ. Instead of an IQ, our mental intelligence quotient, an emotional intelligence quotient may be a more critical factor in wellness and happiness. Now, what's the reason? Is long ago, this concept of a tripartite brain came into theory, and although some of it's controversial, the concept of the three brains is helpful to understand what happens to us. We have what's called a reptilian brain, which is our brain stem, which is our pulse, controls our pulse, our respiration, our blood pressure, all those basic vital functions. Then next, developmentally, came our emotional brain called our limbic system. This is our feelings, our emotions in life. And then last, the cognitive brain, which is our cerebral cortex, which has to do with our thoughts and the meaning we ascribe to certain events in our life. So the emotional disclosure theory that James Pennebaker, who's one of the leading researchers on journaling, discussed in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, he calls this the inhibition theory. He says the central assumption is this, that in stress or emotional upheaval, the inhibition of our thoughts, our feelings, and our behaviors is an active process and it requires work. That inhibition, especially of painful, traumatic experiences, creates cumulative stress on the body, resulting in increased vulnerability to stress-related diseases. Now, the corollary that he tests is that the disclosure of these traumatic experiences, their release to some degree, or redefinition, or change in their symbolic meaning by disclosure, reduces the likelihood of a negative health outcome. Now, Woody Allen has a funny saying about this. He goes, I never allow myself to get angry. I just keep it inside and grow a tumor instead. Now, he's joking, but in a way he's right. What he's saying is what Pennebaker says, that when we suppress and inhibit these painful thoughts, it takes energy and it depletes our body's natural ability to heal. In the emotional disclosure studies, a study done by Pennebaker and Petrie showed in the Journal of Consulting and Clinical Psychology, they took 40 medical students who were negative for hepatitis B antibodies, and they randomly assigned them to two different groups. One, to write about traumatic events, and two, to write about control topics. So for four consecutive weeks, daily sessions, and the results were as follows, that participants in the emotional expression group showed significantly higher antibody levels against hepatitis B at the 4 and 6 month follow-up. In other words, the writing intervention influenced the body's ability to mount an immune response to a vaccine. And it shows that the emotional inhibition may diminish the ability of the immune system to respond effectively to antigens, which are portions of a protein that create an immune response. So this was fascinating. We think that every immunization works equally as well, but if there's a lot of emotional inhibition or stress going on, that may actually inhibit the ability of our body to mount an immune response to a vaccine. Now, one more study that came out in 88 in the Journal of Consulting and Clinical Psychology by James Pennebaker showed that writing about traumatic experiences for as little as 15 minutes a day can reduce physician visits for illness, improve serum immune function, and enhance work performance. So again, a very simple act such as writing for only 15 minutes a day, and I think this was three consecutive days, reduce physicians' visits for illness, improved immune function, and enhanced work performance. One last amazing study came out in JAMA in 1999. They took 107 patients with asthma or rheumatoid arthritis and divided into two groups. The treatment group wrote about their most stressful event in their lives, and the control group just wrote about emotionally neutral topics. And both groups wrote for only 20 minutes on three consecutive days. And the findings after 4 months, and again, this was only three consecutive days, but 4 months after that intervention, the asthma patients in the treatment group showed a 20% improvement in their lung function, and the control group showed no improvement whatsoever. The rheumatoid arthritis patients in the treatment group showed a 28% reduction in disease severity. The control group showed no change whatsoever. Now, what's important about that? Remember, the control group wrote about emotionally neutral topics. What makes the treatment critical? We're writing about the most stressful events in our lives. We're writing about adverse, difficult, painful situations that may be inhibiting the ability of our body to heal well. So remember, the difference between writing a journal and keeping a diary is that when you journal about the painful traumatic events, and that's the benefit of guided journaling in the Handbook of Journaling that I wrote, uses only methods to address this very critical, that it's emotionally powerful things that we're writing about, not just emotionally neutral topics. Keeping a diary and a travelogue and saying I went here, I went there, I had lunch with so-and-so does not incur show a benefit in journaling. It's only when we emotionally disclose those deeper, more difficult, painful items that we're dealing with in life. Now, remember, the second way that journaling helps us is through what we call cognitive restructuring. This is helping us to overcome negative thoughts and limiting beliefs. So remember that all our thoughts and feelings are chemical, and neuropeptides and neurosignatures are these complex release of chemical messengers and nerve cell impulses. So these are the messengers. Neurosignatures really are the messenger patterns of thought, feeling, attitude, and belief. When we journal about difficult issues, we reconstruct painful thoughts, feelings, and images associated with these events, and we thereby change our neurosignatures. And what does changing neurosignatures change? It changes our biochemistry, because these thoughts and feelings are chemical. James Pennebaker says it really well in his book, Opening Up, The Healing Power of Confiding in Others. He says that journaling helps us find meaning in complicated life circumstances. Writing helps us to reconstruct painful thoughts and images into a story or narrative. And once we can give an upsetting event some degree of structure, with a clear beginning, middle, and end, we are better able to move past it. Now, the third way that journaling helps us is by discovering who we are, what we feel, and what we want in life. This is self-awareness or honest self-expression. Now, the critical part of this, and it came out in a short interview of Margaret Kemeny, a researcher in mind-body medicine, in Healing in the Mind by Bill Moyers. And what it showed was that, the honest expression of emotion, whether it was negative, like fear, anger, resentment, or jealousy, or positive, like happiness, peacefulness, joy, and laughter, results in an increase in the number and activity of natural killer cells. In other words, simple positive thinking does not keep us well, nor does negative thinking necessarily make us ill. There are stages we go through when we deal with adversity and stress. One of them is feeling the negative emotions, and then we need to transform those into positive motivations where we overcome the negativity, the adversity, and we move to a higher level. We climb to a more aware and a greater healing potential by overcoming that adversity. So we can't really pretend to be happy. Journaling is about taking a really powerful look and a brutally honest look at what's not right in our lives or what could be better, addressing it and then overcoming it. Now, a really fascinating qualitative study done by Bruce Ballen and Wayne Skinner in Academic Psychiatry 2008 looked at medical residents who were studying in an addiction medicine rotation. And reflection techniques are simply ways of discussing what we honestly feel about situations and people. And what it found in this study was that reflection techniques, either in reflective journaling, which is what we're talking about here, or reflective discussion in a discussion group, were endorsed by students as extremely valuable in developing professional attitudes that help them effectively deal with and care for individuals suffering from addictive disorders. And I would generalize that to say that when we journal, we will come to new attitudes that will make all of us more valuable and help us to deal effectively with and care for individuals in our lives that are suffering from any problem, whether it just be stress, finances, jobs, it doesn't matter. The benefits of honest self-expression become a core, what we call core competence, that in this particular study, a professional competence essential to patient care in our lives, a core ability that allows us to really care for and help ourselves and others live a better life. And the last and final benefit of the healing power of journaling is in what we call being true to ourselves. there was a fascinating book that I read once called Remarkable Recovery by Mark Ian Barash and Carol Hirschberg, and they examined the characteristics of patients who experience spontaneous remissions from cancer or who live beyond the expectations of doctors. And their findings were amazing. The one most compelling quality of those graced by a miraculous healings was congruence. Now, what is congruence? It is a way for patients or for us to be deeply true to themselves, manifesting a set of behaviors growing from the roots of their being. Right? In very simple terms, it's authenticity. It's being who we really are, not pretending to be somebody different. And in this power of living a life of congruence, a life that's in alignment with our purpose, our beliefs, our values, our character in life, we can really tap into a tremendous reservoir of healing in our lives. So in summary, we see that journaling is a vital pathway to our healing system. And it helps us to process difficult emotions through emotional disclosure. It helps us to overcome our negative thoughts and limiting beliefs through cognitive restructuring. It helps us discover who we are and what we feel, what we want, through self-awareness and honest self-expression. And lastly, it helps us to be true to ourselves, to find a way to be congruent with our greater purpose, our higher purpose and higher power, what we're here to do in life, what we're here to accomplish. And we're going to sum it all up with a saying by Norman Cousins, my favorite author on mind-body, and he says, "The doctor, healer, or educator has a role beyond the prescription pad to invoke the patient's own bodily resources for healing." In other words, as we reach out for the best that medical science has to offer, journaling provides us a way to reach within, to mobilize our own internal resources for healing, to grow in alignment with our greater vision, our greater purpose for our lives and the lives of those we love, and to help us to make a deeper impact in our day-to-day lives, to live a happier, healthier life, greater physical health, with greater emotional happiness, and with greater spiritual well-being. So I thank you for this opportunity to share with you some of these very fundamental concepts of healing related to journaling. And then I encourage you to really go through the exercises in the book. They are all designed to help you elicit the most maximum healing response possible. Guided journaling, again, leads you step by step. So it doesn't let you just write a travelogue or a diary. It makes sure that it gets to the heart of the emotional, spiritual concepts or pains that we all go through in life, our own woundedness, and helps us to come to a place of greater understanding and greater healing and wholeness that we all deserve and crave in our lives. So thank you very much.